Well, today we come to the sixth commandment, do not murder. It's short, as a matter of fact, the sixth and the eighth are the shortest of them all. And it was with that in mind that I was greatly disappointed to find out that the commentaries on this one is some of the longest explanations, hundreds of pages to go along with this seemingly simple command, don't murder. As Father Heaton introduced to us last week, the commandments or the tables of the law are broken into two. And by that, I don't mean that Moses was angry when he saw the children of Israel worshiping the golden calf and threw them down the hill and broke them in two. But no, they naturally are divided into two. The first four commandments, our duty to God, and the last six commandments, our duty to our neighbor. But most people, I think, we would all agree, they have conceded at this point in their lives and in the life of the world that killing other people and perhaps other living beings is wrong. There are very few people that would argue with you that it's a good thing to go out and kill another person. And vegetarianism and veganism have made such strides in our own day that the argument that we shouldn't kill other living things is certainly appreciated by many in our world. My daughter, Charlotte, wanted to be a vegetarian until she found out that she couldn't eat bacon. And that was the deal breaker for her. And only in Texas do they still accept the he needed killing as an accepted murder defense. But most people around the world agree that we should not kill other people. So why do we need a commandment for that? Well, simply stated, the sixth commandment establishes the sacredness of human life, but not simply human life, but all that pertains to our life, which includes our bodies and souls, our families that come naturally from us, and our property, which is an extension of our persons. Each one of the commandments, and I won't go through all 10 today, but simply to remind you of where we've come from, each one of the commandments has a prohibition and also a demand or a requirement. The first commandment prohibits worshiping things that are not God, but the coincident requirement is that we do worship God and keep his commandments. All law extends from his perfect and holy law, that we should not worship false idols. We should not make gods out of our own imagination, says the second commandment. But we also should remember that the second commandment teaches us that we must worship God and worship him the way in which he has demanded or required of us. We should set aside, as we find in the fourth commandment, a holy day, keeping the Sabbath day specially for him. That we should not take God's name in vain, yes, not using filthy language or to waste the gifts given to each one, because we are God's name bearers, but also requiring that we give testimony to the world around us the greatness of God's name. So the prohibition and the requirement. And then last Sunday, we saw how it was that we should honor our parents and all those who are in authority over us. This is the requirement. It is the only commandment with a promise that the Lord may extend our lives in the land that he has blessed us with. But of course, the prohibition stands as well, that those who are mother and father haters, those who rebel against the leaders, the magistrates, they are themselves enemies of law, of order, of peace, and tranquility, and they fall under the just penalties of God and of the law. So each of the commandments has its prohibition and its requirement. And so we find that the sixth commandment is just as much so. It is simple to say, don't kill anybody. And I think that everybody in the room here could raise their hand and say, I can check that box. I have not killed a soul in my life, unless I don't know you very well and you actually are secret mass murderers here. But I don't think that that's true. But you see, the commandment also requires that we not simply avoid damaging our neighbor, but that we positively seek his success and protect the good of his name and his property. It's not simply that you avoid hurting or tearing down your neighbor, but that you positively seek his success and protect his good name. And this, of course, we find is the great difficulty. That great reformer, John Calvin, in Switzerland, writes of the Sixth Commandment this way: God not only forbids us to be murderers, but also prescribes that everyone should study faithfully to defend the life of his neighbor, and practically to declare that it is dear to him, that is, his neighbor's life is dear to him. That we should not only live at peace with him, without exciting quarrels, but also should aid, as far as we can, the ones in misery, who are unjustly oppressed, and should endeavor to resist the wicked, lest they should injure anyone they like. Very plainly stated, that this commandment, the Sixth Commandment, demands not only that we avoid hurting and damaging other people, but that we positively take upon ourselves the burden of protecting our neighbors from injury, that we seek their good, and as it relates to the weak, the downtrodden, and the oppressed, that they should find special privilege in our communities, that we should seek them out to do them special good, and to protect them against those who would seek to hurt them, put the criminal in our midst. They should be our enemies. Those who seek to hurt others, they are our enemies. So we should see then that the Sixth Commandment establishes the principle of law and order. God is a God of order. As I try to show my young theology students here at the school, the very first implication of the doctrine of creation is that God brings order out of chaos. So says the first verses of the Bible, that the Spirit of God hovered over the waters of chaos. And then he said to them, let there be light. And there was light. And then he separated the waters from the waters. And then he separated the lands from the waters. And then he populated each one of these regions with life and order. You see then that the great and deep truth, the mystery of creation, shows that God is a God of order, not of chaos. That even tyranny, and this is astonishing to us, but we hear it not only from Paul, but also Peter in the New Testament, that even a tyrannous ruler is better than anarchy. That riots in the streets are the worst possible arrangement. And that everyone, every member of the body politic, every member of the Commonwealth is obligated keep order, not only by their personal obedience, but also insofar as within them lies their enforcement of the law. That's not to make you all vigilantes, of course, but it's not enough for you to say, well, I didn't burn that man's storefront down. As the psalmist says, the one who sees the thief, that is, the one who saw him and did nothing about him, the one who sees the thief, agreed with him. It is our obligation not simply to keep the law, but it is to enforce it insofar as our power makes it so. And this isn't simply some kind of hard right commentary on the Old Testament. No, Jesus himself moves quickly to discuss this particular commandment in his commentary on the law that we know of as the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus says these words, you have heard that it was said, to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to counsel. And whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. He goes on to say, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. These are difficult, perhaps even impossible commandments that Jesus gives us. For isn't it enough that we just simply close our eyes and went to our happy place and ignored that person that was really getting on our nerves? Do we actually have to love them? But Jesus says, yes, you must love them. You see, God is in the resurrection business. The very heart or point of the law was never to be content that you didn't kill that person. Pat yourself on the back, that you didn't actually pull out a pistol and shoot them right between the eyes. That was never the intent of the law. The intent of the law was that you didn't wish that they were dead to begin with. That you never actually got to the point in your relationship with that person that you seriously thought about killing them. And that you wished to call them names to give vent to your spleen of anger and wrath. So Jesus goes on to say, instead of fighting with your enemies, make friends with them instead. Yes, we all have principled objections to certain folk, but in the final estimate, it's often our objection that we can't possibly give up on our principle. We're there on our high horse, on our pedestal, and we won't come down. But how many conflicts in human life could be avoided, either in our personal relationships or relationships between states? I teach one young gentleman in this room modern history. Could 20 million Europeans not have died of cruel deaths in the First World War if the kings of Europe, the Tsar of Russia, had said, nope, we're not going to go to war with one another. We're going to negotiate instead of killing one another, instead of gassing one another, instead of starving one another to death. 20 million people, that's a lot of people. We're not going to do that. But they did, on principle, because no one could tell them not to. No one could tell them otherwise. No one could boss them around. But you see, my friends, that the sixth commandment reminds us that God is not in the death business. God is in the resurrection business. He's not content for us just simply to avoid killing one another, but instead that we should be restored to one another. That we should find ways to be at peace with one another, to walk 2 miles instead of one, when our enemy demands it of us, to negotiate with one another instead of being dragged into court and haranguing one another. Nothing against attorneys in the room here. I'm not accusing the attorneys of anything. But what Jesus says is, wouldn't it be better? Wouldn't our community be more wholesome? Wouldn't we be at love and peace with one another if we were willing to negotiate instead of constantly dragging each other into court? John Paul II, Pope of the Roman Church, and who died in 2003 to 2005, and we are not Roman Catholics here, I know, but he was one of the great Christian leaders of the 20th century. Pope John Paul II wrote an encyclical, which is a fancy word for a great big term paper, that he gave to the whole world, and gave to the church. And it was entitled, The Gospel of Life, Evangelium Vitae, The Gospel of Life. It was published in 1995. And in in that encyclical, in that great big theology paper, he proposed that there was a conflict in the world between the culture of life and the culture of death. And he said that our world, the late 20th century Western world, was committed or entrapped by the culture of death. And John Paul II wrote these words: "A person who, because of illness, handicap, or more simply just by existing, compromises the well-being or lifestyle of those who are more favored, tends to be looked upon as an enemy, to be resisted or eliminated. In this way, a kind of, quote, conspiracy against life is unleashed. This conspiracy involves not only individuals in their personal, family, or group relationships, but goes far beyond to the point of damaging and distorting at the international level relations between peoples and states." So said John Paul II. That some people, by virtue of their handicap, or because of their illness, or just because of the fact that they annoy us by being, are considered to be expendable. And this, he says, is characteristic of our culture of death. And we, my friends, must be in the resurrection business. We should oppose the culture of death. So I conclude then my homily today by talking to you specifically about four things, and I'll mention them very briefly, that I think are ways to war against the culture of death. First of all, I thought that Father Keaton's homily last week was exactly right as it related to honoring our father and our mother. We should not lead the weak astray and cause them to stumble. So Paul writes in Ephesians, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." Those of us who are in authority, grandparents, parents, teachers, administrators, doctors, firefighters, policemen, all of them, each have a responsibility to care for those who are beneath them, the weak, the suffering, the oppressed. And we have an obligation, each in our own way, not to lead others astray, but to lead them into life and the joy of the world that God has made for them, and to give them the encouragement that they need to become the people that God has made them to be, to give them the gospel, to show them that life that never ever ends. So we should not lead the weak astray. Secondly, we should care for ourselves. I love this parish for so many reasons, but not the least being that we've got all kinds of medical professionals here. That this sixth commandment prohibits or warns us against not caring for ourselves and the life that God has given us. So the sin of gluttony falls underneath this particular commandment. Sin of gluttony. Now, the first thing you may say is, well, I don't eat too much. Well, that's not what gluttony is. Gluttony, as a matter of fact, is the sin of not using the world that God has given us in the appropriate way. So, you can eat too much. You can eat too little. You can starve yourself. You can hurt yourself. The body that God has given you is not your own. And so you can hurt yourself. That is a sin. That's breaking the sixth commandment. Suicide. Suicide is under the sixth commandment. You cannot kill another. You cannot murder another person. You are a person. You cannot kill yourself. And you can't hurt yourself. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a healthcare provider, but I do read the news, and I know how many sad people there are out there. The sixth commandment speaks to their brokenheartedness. They should not hurt themselves in any way. And oh, by the way, for those wild-haired young men in here that like to go bungee jumping and drive 200 miles an hour in their cars and do all kinds of stuff like that, this commandment speaks to you as well. That all too often, adolescent desire for self-destruction. You cannot do that. That is a crime and a sin against the sixth commandment. So that we care for ourselves. This is an application of the sixth commandment. Thirdly, that we care for the poor and the old in our midst. Paul writes to his young protege, Timothy, in his first letter, these words, "But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." It is our duty as a Christian community to care for one another, but especially the weak and those who cannot care for themselves. I know that we love to get up our hobby horses when it comes to the political question about entitlement programs and about welfare. But the fact that the government proposes to offer welfare to the poor doesn't absolve us from that either. We must, as a Christian community, be not only aware but active in the midst of caring for those who are too weak and too poor to care for themselves. They are the household of God. We must be in the midst of that. And then finally, and I close with this, which is that it should be obvious to us that the institution and the provision of abortion in our nation is one of the greatest scourges on the history of our nation and of the people of this world, but certainly against the great tradition of Western civilization and justice. Justice is being undone. Justice is being broken and made a laughingstock as we continue to murder unborn children. God is not pleased, and God will not be ridiculed. He says, don't murder. By the broadest sense of the word murder, we can all agree that means don't kill somebody who didn't do anything and didn't deserve to be killed. That child that has yet been born has not done anything to anyone. It deserves the life that God has given it. God is the author of all life. We are not in a position to take that life from that child. It is an abomination, and it is something that we as a nation must repent of and must end as quickly as possible. My friends, I don't want to leave you with a bad taste in your mouth, because the great, deep truth of the sixth commandment is that God is in the resurrection business. That's the reason why he says, don't murder. God is a great and loving and powerful God. It's because of the fact that he is truly the life giver and the lover of his creation that he can require of us this law. Don't kill. And bring to life those who are in need. Amen.